Temple Station. Big Rob, every once in a while we get lucky, man.
Yeah, we get lucky sometimes.
Every once in a while we get lucky.
Very lucky.
And we find an individual who is changing the world through their research, through their presence. And we are fortunate to be able to get Dr. M. Roy Wilson, who is the president of Wayne State University.
Yes, sir.
And he came to Wayne State University after he led the development and implementation of an integrated system for planning, coordinating, and evaluating at the National Institute of Health.
Wow.
And he's an expert in research on disparities. Rob, he's been given a lot of accolades for his research that he had done in medicine, including the one that's very passionate to me, Rob.
What's that?
Glaucoma.
Oh, okay.
Yes. And I'm not going to waste too much time because I got a lot of questions I want to ask him. But we're fortunate to have Dr. M. Roy Wilson on the phone line, president of Wayne State University. How you doing today, Doc?
Oh, I'm doing great. Thank you very much for having me.
Yes, yes. It is definitely an honor. Thank you for allowing us the time to talk to you.
My pleasure.
I can imagine how the request log is. So how's your first year at Wayne State? How has it been?
It's been terrific. Wayne State's a great institution. I love the city of Detroit. I think it's got a can-do kind of attitude, and a lot's happened over this past year, and Wayne State's been a big part of that, and it's just really thrilling to be a part of both Wayne State and Detroit. Lots happening, and to be a part of that is just great.
You got a very unique background. You were born in Japan, right?
That's correct.
You're African American and Japanese.
My mother was Japanese, right?
How was that being raised in Japan?
You know, for me, it was great. I think I learned at a very early age to appreciate other cultures, understand that there's more than one way of doing things, appreciate other people, be able to get along with all kinds of people. And I think that's something that has helped me in my adult life. My dad was in the military, and so we moved around a lot. I probably went to, 8, 9, 10 grade schools. Growing up, and that made me have to adjust all the time and meet different people and just get reacquainted. And to be able to do that as an adult, I think has been a skill that I was able to develop as a youngster, and I think that's helped me.
Wow. Now, in 1996, you were named one of the best doctors in the world. And now, you was only 43 years old at that time. Were you surprised to get those kind of accolades as one of the best doctors in the world at age 43?
Well, certainly that was a great honor. I up until that time, I was a very busy glaucoma surgeon and researcher. I wasn't that involved with the administration. I was just beginning to get involved with the administration, so I had time to really focus on my glaucoma work. And it was just a real honor to be able to be recognized for your subspecialty work.
Right, right. Now, you've done some research in Africa. Tell us about that.
Yeah. Well, the research I did in Africa was looking at blindness and visual impairment in the extreme north province of Cameroon, West Africa. And what we were able to find is that one part of the work was to look at children between the ages of 1 and 5 to see if they had vitamin A deficiency or to what extent they had vitamin A deficiency. And we found that it was a major public health problem there, and as a result, we were able to get some vitamin A pills, distribute them to the inhabitants of the extreme north province, and basically take care of that problem. It's not it's a problem that's pretty easy to take care of if identified. It's just that typically in remote areas, they're not identified. And the extreme north province of Cameroon only had one physician, and with a population that's into the millions.
Wow.
And so it was a very, very underserved area. And our research also was, formed the impetus for a prevent blindness program, national program for the country of Cameroon. And so certainly that was very, very nice and very rewarding.
Wow. So since that time, you've seen a decrease in the blindness?
Well, since I did my research, which was a long time ago, we haven't done any follow-up work there, but the programs that we put into place there have been adopted by, as I mentioned, by the country of Cameroon, and my expectation is that there will certainly have been some improvement.
Right, right. Now, you work for the National Institute of Minority Health Disparities of the National Institute of Health. Now, and your specialties was dealing with African Americans and minority and disparities there. What are some of those issues that you think we should be concerned about, African Americans should be concerned about?
Well, there are a number of diseases and disorders that disproportionately affect African Americans. In fact, even the area that we were just talking about, glaucoma, is a disease that disproportionately affects African Americans. It turns out that one of my initial research projects was in the island of St. Lucia. It was a big epidemiological project, and at the time it was suspected that African Americans, or blacks in general, had a much higher prevalence of glaucoma than whites, but it really hadn't been shown in a scientific way, and so my research study there was really the first study to show that blacks do definitively have much higher prevalence of glaucoma. They get a younger age, and it's more severe. The prevalence in my study was 6 to 7 times more in African Americans. And now that's a pretty well-known disease, a pretty well-known statistic that African Americans are disproportionately affected. And as a result, I think more focus is being placed on identifying and treating African Americans with glaucoma. But certainly there are a number of other diseases. Hypertension is another one that comes to mind. Diabetes, stroke, many of the major diseases that cause death and disability is disproportionately in the African-American population. And wow. So part of what we did at the National Institute for Minority Health and Health Disparities was to encourage scientific research and to help reduce health disparities and also fund training programs to help minority investigators go into the field to better to do research in these areas to, again, try to eliminate these health disparities.
Well, in regards to glaucoma, Dr. Wilson, why do you think it affects African Americans more than any other race?
You know, that is a very interesting question because it's not just, it turns out that it's not just all blacks. It seems like blacks that originated from West Africa are much more affected than East Africa.
So oh,
even
wow.
within Africa, there's a huge difference between West and East Africa.
Right.
So, that suggests that there are some genetic factors involved. There might be some environmental factors. We haven't quite identified those yet. So it's an area that's under intense investigation, and we really don't know the reasons yet.
Wow. That is amazing that you say that, because my African ancestry, DNA, and you're right on point. I did my maternal DNA for my mom's side and found out that we came from northern Nigeria, Fulani tribe, 99.9697 match. And,
right.
And of course, they are in West Africa.
Right.
So to hear you say that, wow, kind of hits home
right.
With me being diagnosed with glaucoma at an early age and had the laser surgery at an early age.
Right.
Wow, give me something to think about, some more research I need to do on that.
Right.
That's good to know.
Well, when I was a resident, we used to think of glaucoma as a disease of older people, 60s and 70s and 80s. But what we found is that African Americans tend to actually get a much younger age, and it's not unusual to see African American men particularly get glaucoma in their 30s and 40s.
Wow. Man, tell me about sickle cell anemia. Has this country put enough research and resources into sickle cell anemia?
Well, I think that every kind of disease like that disproportionately affects different populations, you know, could get some more help, because it's just not, morally, it just seems like it's just not fair that a disease is so disproportionately affecting one population and not on another. Certainly, there is a lot of research that's being done on sickle cell anemia. I don't have the numbers right now in terms of how much money is being put into it.
Mm-hmm.
But I do believe that any health disparity disease, of which sickle cell anemia is a prime example, in general, needs more resources so that we can get into not just looking at what the differences are in prevalence, but get into the more of the scientific reasons, the causes for the differences in severity, the difference in prevalence and incidence, and those kinds of probing questions, which requires resources.
Right, right. Well, I don't know what it's going to take to get society and maybe public funds to dig further in that, but it bothers me that the research is not there. You don't even hear a lot of conversation about it. Yeah, yeah. On the phone, I'm Dr. M. Roy Wilson. He's president. He's president of Wayne State University. Yes, he's a doctor. He is one of the, we got to call him one of the elites, because you were given a very distinctive honor in 2003, inducted into the Institute of Medicine. Tell us about that.
Yeah, well, thank you very much for mentioning that. The Institute of Medicine is one of the the institutes within the national academies. There's the Institute of Medicine, and the National Academy of Engineering, and the National Academy of Sciences. And the Institute of Medicine is probably one of the highest honors you can get in medicine, perhaps outside of the Nobel Prize.
Hmm.
And it is one of these honorific kind of things that you know, once you get it, you know, you wonder, well, how did I get this? Because, you know, there's so many deserving people out there, but.
Right.
I did get it at the in 2003. I was 49, I think, at the time. And usually people who get inducted into the Institute of Medicine are well into their 60s or at least into their 50s. And so it was quite an honor. The Institute of Medicine is asked by Congress to take on projects to be an independent body that looks at evidence related to health in the country. And so whenever the Congress wants an independent body to do some sort of study to answer, you know, whatever question they're interested in, the Institute of Medicine is contracted to do that kind of work. And so they select people, but only a certain amount per year. And I believe that I'm the only faculty member at Wayne State with that that's in the Institute of Medicine. I'm going to try to get more people in the Institute of Medicine. We do have, you know, one other person who's in the perinatology research branch of NIH. Technically, he's not a faculty member, but he's in the process of getting his faculty appointment. So we'll have two members of the Institute of Medicine here at Wayne State.
Wow.
Soon. And hopefully within the next 5 years, I can get more people inducted into the Institute of Medicine, because we have some very, very deserving faculty here who should be in and who is not. So that's my mission for the next 5 to 10 years, is to get more Wayne State faculty member inducted into the Institute of Medicine, because they're certainly deserving of that honor.
Wow. On the phone line, president of Wayne State University, which is, I believe, the third largest college in the state of Michigan, right?
That's correct.
Right? Yeah. Wow. So, and people were very happy when they announced that you were the president of Wayne State University. I don't know if you're aware of that. I'm sure you were aware of that.
Well, I'm happy to hear it. I wasn't aware of it, but I'm certainly happy to hear it. And certainly I've had a very good reception. People have just been tremendous, and I'm very appreciative.
Right. A few more research questions, and I want to ask you a few more things about Wayne State University. I got to ask you about glaucoma again, because it affects me personally. Do you think it would ever be a cure?
Well, you know, most of the advances so far in glaucoma has been in the treatment of glaucoma. Certainly, we've got medications now the prostaglandins, which have been a revolutionized treatment for glaucoma. The surgeries for glaucoma is just getting much better than the surgeries we had available 15, 20 years ago. A cure would be difficult, but, you know, I've seen some marvelous, almost miraculous kind of things happen as a result of good research. You know, now you can take people who are blind and they can, you know, see some semblance of motion, and you can transplant retinas. I mean, there's just so many things that can be done now, which, you know, I just wouldn't believe was possible 20 years ago. And certainly 30 years ago when I did my residency. So, you know, there's a lot of good research going on, particularly with respect to the optic nerve in glaucoma, which hasn't been focused upon very much before. And it would not surprise me if there was a cure for glaucoma sometime in the future with all the kind of research advances that I've been seeing over my lifetime. It's just been tremendous.
Wow. And Dr. Wilson, amazing. When I first got diagnosed with this, and of course, mine is my nerves have been calm, so my pressure is not as high. Thank God for that. But the doctor told me, if you were to smoke marijuana, you wouldn't have this problem. And it threw me for a loop. And I was a correction officer at the time, working in the prison, and definitely hadn't smoked marijuana since 1985. So I was like, I can't do that. But yeah. I couldn't figure out the connection. How do marijuana and glaucoma?
Well, first of all, that certainly isn't something I would recommend. But you know, marijuana does decrease the intraocular pressure, and as you know, in glaucoma, the problem is that the pressure inside the eye, what's called the intraocular pressure, is higher than it should be, and it causes damage to the optic nerve. And so marijuana, what it does is it decreases the intraocular pressure. The problem is that the effects doesn't last very long, and so you probably will basically have to be stoned all the time to get any real beneficial effect of marijuana smoking, and it certainly isn't worth the other
right.
health effects of doing that. So.
Wow. Well, there goes that theory out the door.
Right.
On the phone line, Dr. Imroy Wilson, president of Wayne State University. You know, what has been your most significant research you have ever done?
Well, I think the research I mentioned in St. Lucia, where we found that blacks have a much higher prevalence of glaucoma, meaning, you know, they get it much more frequently. Because as I mentioned, that really was not known before. It was suspected in some clinical work. People thought maybe that might be the case, but it just wasn't shown to be through a detailed study. And so being able to show that, I think, has helped to... and then, you know, once I did that, there were other studies that found the same thing in Barbados and various other places. And so with all this new information, there's been much more of a focus on blacks and African Americans in particular to make sure that they get screened for glaucoma at a much younger age, that if they have the disease, to be treated aggressively, because the as I mentioned, the course of the disease tends to be more aggressive in African Americans. And so you know, hopefully there's just been some eyes that saved as a result of greater awareness that it's a greater problem in African Americans.
Wow, wow. Are there any new research initiatives at Wayne State?
You know, certainly Wayne State is involved in research in glaucoma from you know, a lot of different perspectives. We do have a very good glaucoma division of the Department of Ophthalmology, but, you know, as president of the university, I try not to show too much favoritism to any particular area of the university, because others would think that maybe I'm you know, just showing too much favoritism and not getting the resources that they should be getting. So I'm actually not as active in the Department of Ophthalmology and at Wayne State as I've been, you know, in the past. My responsibilities now span the entire university, and so I try to make sure that every aspect of the university is looked at with equal attention.
Right, right, right. A few more questions. Nationwide, we see the trend of African American males decrease, or were not where it should be percentage-wise attending college. Do that bother you to know that?
Oh my God, that is just it's a travesty. I mean, it's one of the societal issues that we have got to correct. This is just unacceptable. The number of African American men going to college is just too low, and there are a lot of issues related to that. Starts off with parents becoming more actively involved in the child's learning, and teachers being more encouraging and providing good role modeling to all of us who have succeeded being role models and mentoring young African American males. Too many African American males, when they're at an age that's impressionable, think that it's just cooler to do other things than go to college. They have visions of becoming, professional basketball players or rap artists and things like that. And they get more reinforcement for these kinds of other activities versus, mm-hmm. Going to college and being a doctor or lawyer or an engineer or whatever else. And so, the problem is really multifaceted, and it's just also a major societal problem, because I think African American males sometimes don't get the benefit of the doubt, and therefore, they get subliminal messages which are not positive.
Right. Wow. Wow. You think we see that increase in college, we probably see a decrease in crime, probably.
Oh, absolutely. There's some people will claim that there's more college-age African-American males in jail than in college. I actually looked at that, although that's technically not really true, it's almost true. I mean, there's way too many African-American males in prison these days, and not nearly as many in college. So if we can get them into college and have some hope for them and some alternative activities for them to be involved in that's positive, we can do a lot.
Wow, wow. On the phone line, Dr. President of Wayne State University, Dr. M. Roy Wilson. Now, I know you got to the state of Michigan after this affirmative action ban that went into place, but have Wayne State been affected by the affirmative action ban?
You're talking about Prop 2.
Yeah.
It really hasn't affected our undergraduate enrollment numbers. We're at approximately 18% of our student population is African American. And it's been that way for a while, but it has affected our enrollment into our medical school. There was a time when we had, I don't know the exact percentage, but I can tell you that as I go around the country and people, know I'm the president of Wayne State, so many people have come to me to tell me they had graduated. African Americans have come to me, people who I know and I've known for many years have come to me to let me know that they did their training at Wayne State, and very, very successful physicians in various states and throughout the country. And you just don't see that as much anymore. The number of African Americans in our medical school now has really plummeted, and
wow.
That is directly attributable to Proposition 2. So it's really a shame. We have to do everything we can to try to get more African Americans into our medical schools, not only in Wayne State, but throughout the country. The numbers of African Americans in medical school have just dropped throughout the country.
Wow, throughout the country. Wow, especially you hear about UCLA, the decrease in African American enrollment at UCLA is like real low.
Right.
I wonder, do society that bother society knowing that? Then we talk about the crime. People start screaming when the crime is high, but then you see the enrollment in colleges, which is the neutralizer there,
Well, it's a real travesty, and if people aren't bothered by it, they should be. Certainly, it's a societal problem. It's a deep-seated problem that has to be addressed.
Wow. A couple more questions before we go. You were raised in Japan. Did you see? Was it any disparity there from the male and female in college when you was in Japan?
Well, when I was in Japan, it was at a much younger age.
Okay.
I was born there, as I mentioned, and I went to up to about second grade. I came here for a few years, then went back for a few years, and then came back here for high school. And so I wasn't really thinking about college at that time, and so I really can't answer that question.
Okay, I got to ask you this: what do you eat? You eat Japanese food or soul food?
Oh, I love both. You know, I've got heritage in both. I love both.
Wow!
But I was just recently in Japan for this past summer, and I spent about 2 weeks there, and the Japanese food is very, very good.
Wow.
But I love soul food, too, and I wish we had more soul food restaurants here in Detroit.
Wow, you're living the best of both worlds, man. Best of both worlds. Before we go, Dr. Emroy Wilson, what do you want your legacy to be at Wayne State?
I think two things. One is we have a very, very diverse student body here at Wayne State, but I don't think the administration and faculty is as diverse as it should be. And would like to improve diversity throughout the university. I think that Detroit is a very diverse city with one of the highest African American populations in the country, and
mm-hmm.
and our university needs to better reflect that diversity. So that's one, and I think the second is that. Our graduation rates are not as high as they should be, and that's a lot of it is because of the kind of students we take in. Many of them have financial issues, different socioeconomic backgrounds, family backgrounds. Many of them have to work. So there are a number of reasons for that, but regardless of what the reasons are, you know, I would like to make sure that if you're a Wayne State student that you're the chances of you graduating are much higher and much sooner. And so we need to make sure that we try to break down whatever barriers students have, whether they're financial or their home or some other social issue, break down these barriers and get students to graduate. And that would be a great thing to do, both for the students themselves, the parents, and it'd be great for the university also.
Wow. Thank you. I got to give a shameless plug because my oldest daughter just enrolled in your master's program there at Wayne State, and she had offers of around the country, other colleges she could have went to, but she enrolled into an accelerated program and for a year, and went on to Wayne State. She's attending there now, and she'll graduate next spring with her master's degree in being a social worker. So,
congratulations to her, and you know, Wayne State is a great university. I've been to other places. I had choices to go to other places. I wanted to be here. I wanted to be in Detroit, and I just think it's a terrific place, and I'm pleased that your daughter went here.
Yeah.
Is here. Yeah.
Thank you. Well, Dr. Wilson, anything else you want to say before we go? I really appreciate this time you've given us today.
Well, I think it's an exciting time to be in Detroit. You might know that the we're having these events over the next few days called Homecoming Detroit.
Right.
A lot of people are coming from all over the country back to Detroit, and we like to showcase Detroit, you know, show them what's going on. And I'm just very proud of the role that Wayne State is playing in the revitalization of Detroit, particularly in the Midtown area, our public safety officers, the development that we're trying to help spur, the incentives to live here in Midtown. You know, we're playing a major part in the revitalization of Detroit. I'm very proud of that, and I think both Detroit and Wayne State are just going to be very, very exciting places moving into the future.
All right. Dr. Emroy Wilson, President of Wayne State University, thank you once again. We got to keep in contact. I really appreciate you taking out the time.
Absolutely. Well, thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Take care. God bless.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.